Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
As farmers get ready to close the books on 2023, analysts at the USDA are forecasting that this year farmers as a whole will record quite a cut in net cash income, a drop of 21% from last year's record high. But USDA's chief economist Seth Meyer says we need to put the 2023 projected net cash income figure of just under $158 billion in perspective.
Despite what is a large percentage decrease on the order of 20% in net cash farm income year over year, where we're sitting at for 2023 is still exceeds the 20-year average by quite a bit.
He says another way to look at it, if you take together net incomes from 21, 2022, and 23.
This is the three highest consecutive years in the last 50 years.
A condition Meyer says is simply
exceptional.
Exceptional. Gary Crawford, Washington.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
You know, the Deputy Secretary focuses on a lot of the things that farmers and other people who benefit from USDA programs don't see, but it affects how they get the support.
Former member of the House of Representatives from New Mexico, Xochitl Torres Small, Deputy Secretary of Ag, in other words, the COO of USDA.
So whether that's the system for loan processing or for evaluating a loan for a farmer, or whether it's the IT that stores the loan for your home in rural development, or whether it's the people that we hire who you get to see when you walk into a field office. All of those operations are things that the deputy secretary focuses on.
So USDA has been rolling out relief for distressed farm loan borrowers.
Yeah, between supply chain challenges with COVID and food inflation, as well as trade challenges over the last few years, you know, farmers have been facing some tough circumstances. And USDA's focus is on making sure we're able to keep farmers farming and providing a fresh start for producers who might be in challenging positions. And so that's why when President Biden signed the Inflation Reduction Act, one of the key priorities was getting out the $3.1 billion that was provided for farmers who have borrowed from USDA but might be facing some difficulty. And so we've released a large portion of that, about $1.8 billion, in immediate assistance to more than 32,000 borrowers. And we're recently announced an additional tranche of funds for guaranteed borrowers, so even those who didn't borrow directly from USDA but through a bank with a guaranteed program. And now we're working to get out some additional funds to support farmers who maybe were able to make their payments but went through extraordinary measures. They mortgaged their house or took on some other high-interest loan in order to make those payments.
Funding comes from the Inflation Reduction Act, but for producers who might qualify for distressed farm loan relief, what should they do?
So for the extraordinary measures payment, if a farmer went through, again, extraordinary measures to pay their loans, any time between February 28th, 2020 through October 18th, 2022, and then they should apply for these funds. It's a little different than some of the other funds that were delivered that were directly paid for because you could tell who was delinquent on their loan, for example. This is if they did everything they could to pay that loan. So the deadline is December 31st. And they'll want to start either by walking into their local FSA office where they got their loan, or they can go to farmers.gov/loans/inflation-reduction-investments.
And there's another website that will eventually get you there, farmers.gov.
I hope farmers will take a look and apply by December 31st. And just want to thank all of the hardworking farmers out there for doing everything they're doing to feed our country and the world.
It's also important to remember that similar to other USDA Inflation Reduction Act assistance payments, that FSA will report to the IRS any assistance received through a 1099 form. It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
So as we think about the agricultural world today, it's been an interesting year.
Speaking at the recent American Seed Trade Association's Field Crop Seed Convention, Dan Bossi with Ag Resource.
I left you all last year saying that this year, or the year we're getting through, would not be as good as the last few, and that seems to have come forward. U.S. farm income's down over $30 billion. There's the Russian war that's still ongoing. And we want to go through all of this, but I want to get ahead of one question before you go forward, which is, all of you in the seed industry I know are using AI or different algorithms to, of course, go forward. We in the trading industry, or the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, Board of Trade, London, Hong Kong, they are using AI, and we even in my company are trying to get ahead of this. I worry a little bit about the markets, because as AI takes over, we now know that over 90% of the trades in the Chicago markets are now non-human. And so when you think about what's going on in terms of trading and market analysis, it's something that we want to look forward and at least think about as to the opportunity. So as I look at where we are today, we've got two theater wars going on in terms of the world. We've got the one, of course, in Russia that's now entering its third year as of March. We've got another war that started up, of course, between Israel and Hamas and Gaza. And so I don't know how long these wars will go on. Some of it depends upon the money flowing from the United States. You noted yesterday in the Senate, there was kind of a shouting match in terms of the Republicans and Democrats. Who's going to fund the war? And if we do, what do we get in terms of the border? But these wars have a lasting impact on agriculture that we want to dive deeper in. And I want to tell you, when I deal with my Ukrainian farmers, and we're still doing it pro bono, they are kind of on the financial cliff of being able to go forward. So what they plant in a year ahead will be very interesting. We're looking at a great economic reset. I talked to you about rising rates over the years. And as you look at it where we are today, there's a pause now ongoing. But the U.S. dollar is now starting to weaken. And we want to talk about the debt of the United States and debt of consumers. $33 trillion of U.S. debt rising to over $40 trillion within the next 3 years is something that I believe is going to put the dollar under pressure. You've heard me talk about climate for the last couple of years, and when you have me back every year, you know, unfortunately, some of it is a review of what's happened, but then we want to highlight what the opportunities are or where the actions are needed going forward. So climate is indeed changing. I am still not willing to enter into the debate whether it's caused by man or God. We'll leave that for you to decide. But I want to highlight that as we look at the world as it sits today, I'm becoming more concerned about climate and what it means to feed the world in going forward. You can't pick up a newspaper in the United States and not find a bashing of China. This has been ongoing, but I would tell all of my friends in agriculture, we need to remember that China's our biggest agricultural customer, $35 billion a year of ag trade. We need to be careful of what we're saying. Thankfully, at the moment, the Chinese and the Biden administration are starting to get cozy again, but we do have an election forthcoming, and I know the Chinese are very worried about the outcome, and maybe they're buying today, and they're buying for the last couple of months, is in relation to that election and where they believe they need to have reserves. A little bit about regionalization of grain around the world and how it impacts farm profitability. Last year, we had a monster crop in Brazil. I'm told for our friends here in Brazil, it was a record large corn and soybean crop. All within the last 10 years, Brazil has become the world's largest corn exporter. Remember, they have that second crop. I've always told you that if I look at technology in the agricultural business, and I know all of you would say seed traits or something like that is going to be the biggest change in technological of the last decade. When I do my work, it's all about a little crop in Brazil called safrinha. Safrinha in Portuguese means small. It's not a small crop anymore. It's now 90 million metric tons or larger. The Brazilians are there to export when they can. And this has had a big impact in terms of U.S. and agricultural trade.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
25 million bushels taken out of both corn and wheat on this report.
Greg McBride, Director of Brokerage with McHenry, Illinois-based Allendale, referring to the latest USDA numbers.
And both of those were bumps to exports. So we saw nice exports. We've seen better exports out of all three of the major grains, corn, beans, and wheat here recently. So the USDA doesn't typically make a lot of changes in the December report. They save those for the January report. So the fact that we saw just exports affected here is interesting, but not surprising, because a lot of times they'll save some of those production number changes until we get to that January timeframe when we get the four major reports at the same time. So that that'll be something to watch. This was a little bit friendly on the corn side and the wheat side for the USDA WASDE numbers, the grain ending stocks numbers, seeing them down 25 million bushels. But the problem I still have with this corn market is that 2.131 billion bushels for ending stocks, that is still burdensome. That is still a little bit too much. In order to justify the price that we've got, we need to be closer to about, say, 1.7 or 1.8 billion. So we need to see a major cut here just to be able to justify the price that we're at, sub $5.
What about the soybean picture?
We didn't think we were going to see any changes to the ending stocks for the U.S. For soybeans. We didn't get any changes, so nothing extravagant there. We did think potentially we were going to see a minor increase in Argentina's crop, and I still think that might be coming eventually. So they're on a rebound after their drought year last year, essentially the last 2 or 3 years. But they're back at 48 million tons. That was expected to go up about 200,000 tons. I wouldn't be surprised if we're somewhere closer to 50 by the time they get to harvest the next spring for us. On the other hand, the Brazil crop is going the other way. With all the dryness to start out this growing season and their planting season, we were looking at a monster crop, 163 to almost one, you know, there were some areas that were like 168 as far as private analysts looking for their overall production. We're looking at right now the USDA saying they took off 2 million tons. They're at 161 million, and that's still a little bit higher than what some of the private analysts here in the U.S. were saying. You were anywhere from about 2.8 million tons lower to about 3.5 million tons lower. I'm kind of in that camp that I think that number is going to continue to come down a little bit. But right now, it's tough for the USDA to make that assumption because the prime time, the biggest time for yield determination and production for that bean crop in Brazil is going to be in that first 2 weeks of January. So until we get to, let's say, until we get into about maybe the 15th to the 20th of December, we aren't even going to get forecasts that give us an idea of what that first couple of weeks of January look like. So for right now, we can't really get too excited about it. The USDA has recognized a potential problem, but they aren't willing to really overstep at this point with the idea that if the rains do show up, they may have to go the other way. I still do think that we're going to see that number come down a little bit, but we won't truly know for about 3 to 5 weeks. Before we can really make that judgment.
Greg McBride with Allendale. It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
If it gets too cold, that's going to push our energy requirements up a little higher.
Dr. Blaine Johnson is a veterinarian with the new Texas Tech Veterinary School.
Our cattle that are entering their third trimester, that's when our highest energy demands are going to be for that animal. So we need to make sure that we know which animals are going to be rolling into that third trimester and determine if we need a supplement on top of our hay or how much we need to supplement on top of our hay. And we typically evaluate that by doing a body condition score on those cows. So any animals that are falling below like a body condition 5 out of 9, those animals probably need a little bit more supplement going into their gestation here and try to get them up to that 5 to 6 standpoint before we get into calving. And because typically the first couple of months of calving, those animals are going to lose body condition. So we need to make sure we're at an adequate level or maybe a little above. That way we're not going to lose any more in the subsequent breeding season.
What do we need to keep in mind for bulls in the winter?
We've seen a lot of bull catalogs hit your mailbox. And bull sales are going to be starting to pick up December through March. It's probably the hottest time frame. I see a lot of bull sales going on. And the biggest thing we need to determine is what your current bull battery power is. I mean, so when I say that is, do we have an adequate amount of bulls that we need for our cows? Are any of our bulls getting old and need to be removed from the herd? That way we keep our genetic profile moving forward and we're not having too much issues with inbreeding or line breeding in our cattle populations. And then once we figure out where if we need to buy new bulls or replace bulls in our herd, The next thing is, what are our goals for our herd? Are we going to target a production where we're keeping replacements out of this, our potential bulls that we're going to look for? Or are we looking for more of a terminal sire, which we sell all of our calves off, either as weaning or stockers coming in the subsequent breeding season? So those are, that would be the first hurdle I'd want to make sure that we cover if we're looking and thinking about a new bull to add to our herd, is what is our herd goal? And then from there, it can get pretty nitpicky on what we need to figure out on the look at our bulls. And that goes down into our EPDs, so our expected progeny differences. And this can be really kind of overbearing at times because there's a lot of numbers that are going to be thrown in front of you from an EPD standpoint for individual bulls. And trying to determine which EPDs that you need to match for your herd kind of align with what target you're going for. So if we're looking for bulls that are going to produce replacement heifers for our herd, we need to probably target some more maternal traits, those being Cavanese maternal, scrotal size, and frame scores, and milking abilities out of the bull's genetics. And if we're looking for more of a terminal sire, then we need to think about our growth traits. And those would be our yearling weights, our weaning weights, our dollars of beef produced on some of our EPDs that get populated. There's a lot of different indexes and numbers out there. And thankfully, a lot of these catalogs will have a breakdown of what all these EPDs mean and what are the traits that go into it. So if you ever get into a point where you're not sure on something, you can either contact your veterinarian, your local extension officer, or you can contact the producer, as they have a pretty good understanding of what a lot of these EPDs are for, and they can hopefully target a bull that might meet your needs. And I would say it's a lot to think about, but it's good to start thinking about it earlier, because you never want to get to a point where you need a bull and you can't find one, because that's not a good situation to be in.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
I and my staff at Ag Resource, we have a climate scientist. He was a scientist, a climate scientist within the U.S. Navy. And so he's been very helpful for me over the last decade or so. But he wants to tell you that as the globe warms, it's all being absorbed in the oceans.
Dan Bossi with Ag Resource Company speaking at the recent American Seed Trade Association's Field Crop Seed Convention.
I'm not a weatherman, I'm an economist, but I'll tell you what he's suggesting to me. And you can see this in this graphic, how warm these ocean temperatures are. And to the left, you can see the ocean temperature map, and we're setting records. Again, as sunshine comes into the planet from afar, and it's being trapped in our oceans, it's not being trapped in our land masses, and that's why we're seeing this warming, and we're getting something called marine heat waves. So I said, tell me very simply, so I can tell the audience at ASTA, what's going on with global weather patterns and why they should be concerned? Because we all deal with weather and agriculture, right? Well, he would come back to me and say, Dan, if you see the chart to your left, when the poles are cold, north and south, you end up with a cold gradient in the middle, which gives you a jet stream that's much stronger, that goes in a zonal fashion around the world. That zonal fashion and its strength means that weather patterns move through. As the poles warm, you end up with more angularity in the jet stream, the chart to your right, and that gives us pattern stagnation, warmer temperatures. And so in a thumbnail, this is what he wants to leave with you, that we're now in this extreme to the left, that we need to have more thought process, if you will, in terms of growing crops under high temperatures. He also will take the GRACE root zone soil moisture map and point out to you that there's really four hot spots that are evident today that we want to be watching: Western Canada, Northern Brazil, the black soils area of Russia, and then Western Australia. These are areas that today are seeing crop issues that we need to be very careful in at least featuring them going forward. Normally on this map, I may have one or two problems each hemispheric growing season, but today we've got four, and in some cases there's been five. And a little bit about, just to prove this point to you, when I talk about global yield stagnation, I know all of you in this room are doing everything you can to breed better seeds, more yield, more help in terms of plant yield. But if I look at the November USDA report in terms of corn or soybean yields, notice that we've gone sideways. We're stagnating. We haven't set a new record corn or soybean yield going back for at least 6 or 7 years, depending upon the crop. I think all of you is working as hard as ever. I think you're spending as many research dollars as ever. But I believe that Mother Nature is causing some issues, not only globally, but also domestically, that you can see here. Let's hope the upcoming 24 growing season will give us a new record. But today, that trend line yield, if you will, on corn is up at 183 bushels an acre, on soybeans close to 53, and our yield prospects, as you can see, have been well below that over the last decade or more. A little bit about river systems, because it's the artery of global agricultural trade. Again, getting back to my weather thesis, if you think about our Panama Canal, it's at one of its lowest levels on record. And the Panama Canal, if you look in the graphic to your right, the prospect of getting more rainfall there is not good in January, February, March, or April. It really doesn't start to see the rainy season return until you get into May. So the cost of getting grain or any goods through the Panama Canal will stay elevated. The transportation through it will be restricted. There's 88 vessels this morning waiting in the canal, waiting to go through to the other side. Some people are looking at going all the way around the Horn of South America. And that's why freight rates to move grain globally have spiked up rather sharply in the last month.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Oh, Tony, this is a process that's near on maddening.
A former chairman of the House Ag Committee, now chairman of the Science, Space, and Technology Committee, from Oklahoma, Frank Lucas, on ERP.
We started down this trail in 2021 with ERP and had great difficulty in delivering the program resources. So the secretary says that for 2022, we'll rewrite and we'll make it work better. I actually brought this to his attention in a hearing some time ago, that the way ERP was working was not functional. And always understand, I'm an old school ag economist. I'm an old school wheat and cattle guy from the 3rd District of Oklahoma. Resources should follow production, because farm bills are about raising food and fiber so that we can feed and clothe, take care of ourselves, and have a little extra to sell into the world market for cash. The secretary's perspective on this, or at least the language written for the 22 ERP, is much like the White House's perspective, which is dollars in the farm bill, dollars in the program, including ERP, should not follow production, but they should be allocated to you based on who you are and what you are producing. Or as they like to say up here, be socially responsible and environmentally responsible. That's maddening to me, Tony, because if you're taking money to address weather issues and conditions beyond a producer's control, but you're allocating it based on who the farmer is and what they're growing and how they're growing it, then that's defeating the whole purpose of the Farm Bill safety net since 1933. So we're all pushing back hard. Matter of fact, I am told from my constituents in Oklahoma that basically the local FSA offices have almost ground to a halt, because a number of producers have figured out that the way the administration is working this, if you don't claim yourself to be a minority, you're going to be locked out of the program. So suddenly you have, I am told, an incredible number of people trying to come up with a way to legitimately reclassify themselves so they qualify. That is amazing and would not be necessary if USDA and DC had just handled the resources in the traditional way of doing it. So if I sound a little fired up, Tony, this ERP stuff is maddening, and it's causing people to do gymnastics to try and get the assistance that they should be qualified for. Oh, my goodness.
Can we fix this in the Farm Bill to eliminate the need for ad hoc disaster?
That's been the goal of various Farm Bills. And if you want to eliminate ad hoc, we have a solid basic farm bill in the 2018 Farm Bill, which is based on the 2014 Farm Bill, using the principles of crop insurance to provide protection on price swings and on uncontrollable weather patterns. But it's a voluntary program. You go in and purchase the coverage you want. Yes, it's subsidized to make it viable, but you decide if you want to participate. You decide how much you want to participate, and then you know where you stand. By lowballing the funding of these programs in the funding process, by the rest of Congress and the request from administrations, then we don't have enough dollars to make the programs function properly. And that's when you slide into this emergency relief program type stuff. We should not have to do this. We should address crop insurance and price protection straight up in the regular farm bill process, properly funded, and then we'd all know what the rules are for the next 5 years. We could all play by the rules, and we wouldn't have to go down and take a $50 spit test so we could prove that somebody in our genetic pool was classified as a minority by USDA so we could qualify. That's corrupting the programs and corrupting people.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
A drop in what crop producers received price-wise in October led to an overall decline in the USDA Agricultural Prices Index and prices received for commodities. The Crop Production Index reflected a 7.6% month-over-month decrease, as prices received for food grains such as wheat was the only category in that sector reflecting an increase, a 4.8% rise from the previous month. With the Livestock Production Index showing a 0.3% increase in October, the overall Ag Price Index indicated a 6.3% decline month over month. Minimal upticks in what meat, animal, and dairy producers received price-wise in October offset an over 2% decrease in prices for poultry and egg commodities. The prices paid index for inputs and services rose 0.1% from the previous month, due in part to higher prices for feeder cattle and fertilizer inputs and increased wages. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.